All right. Hello, everyone. Yeah, this time of year, it gets a little light in the sanctuary, right? People are traveling. People have family. You know, I've got Jasmine home myself, so I'm spending a lot of time with her. So I understand that people aren't here in their usual numbers, but that's okay. That's what this year is all about, I think, really. I think that it's nice at the end of one year, before starting up another year, that we break our routines, that we relax, that we don't work as much, that we enjoy family. I don't know about you guys, but it kind of gets me pumped up and ready to start all over again, having this little wind down time. So I'm kind of glad that we have these two holidays that are considered major holidays really close together, and that we get this break every year. So it's okay with me if not everybody's here. How was last night, George? I was wondering about your movie group because I figured it was probably pretty light too, huh?
It was very light. We actually did not use a full hour. Yeah. There was only really two other people that had any input at all. So yeah, we went through it pretty quickly. So yeah, and that's what it is.
Yeah, well, it's just the time of year. Yeah,
right,
it's just
right.
Time of year. So lots, you know, I think lots of people started traveling last Friday. Some people or Saturday or Sunday, but yeah. Oh, and then you listen to Christmas music. Well, you know what? When I was doing the weekly gathering yesterday, and of course I played three Christmas songs, that was my thought, was, you know what I'd like to really do is just sit here and play Christmas music for an hour. You know, there's lots of really good Christmas songs, really good, you know, people singing the songs. And, you know, traditionally we only listen to them for this short little period of time. And I don't think I actually listen to all the ones that I really like each year. I don't ever get around to it because I still have a pretty busy life. So, yeah, I would have enjoyed just sitting and listening to Christmas music. But hopefully the weekly gathering was also worth your time. Yeah, so we're here now for Gentle Healing Year 3, and we do have a very small group here, but before I start, I will ask if any of you all have something you want to share or say before we get started. All right, then. I will jump right in. So as a reminder, I think you guys know, next week we're also going to be on Monday. So we're doing this for 2 weeks, and then we're back to our regular Tuesday schedule. And let's open up to 1033. You guys are just moving so quickly, it seems to me. I keep thinking you're going to catch up to me, but that hasn't happened yet. So far, I managed to stay a little bit ahead of you guys, but we'll see if you catch up with me before the end of this, to where I'm actually doing the homework right along with you instead of being ahead of you. We'll find out. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go to my journal, and then I'll share my screen with you. All right, there's my journal. We're going to go to 1033. And see, according to my notes, we want to look at both 1033 and 1034 together. So let me read both of those out of the book. So 1033 says, "He who exerts seriously now is able to overcome predispositions and exalt himself from the states of darkness and stupidity and impurity." Funny, I'm sure I read this quote and contemplated it. It wouldn't even be on my notes if I hadn't, but I don't remember reading it, and it's just funny to me now. That's a funny quote. I'm like, I wonder why I picked it out. We'll find out when I read my journal. He who exerts seriously now is able to overcome predispositions and exalt himself from the states of darkness and stupidity and impurity. I'm guessing you guys might like to exalt yourself from those states if you perceive yourself in them. I don't know. See, I don't perceive anybody in those states, so that's why it's kind of a funny quote. And then 1034 says, there is nothing that intense self-effort cannot achieve. So let me see why I wanted to look at these quotes. So 1033, most of all, the script applies to the mind. The script comes into the mind as thoughts. The script is seen through the mind as perceptions. But I am not the mind, which means the script has no effect, no hold on me. Wholehearted, single-minded focus can be directed towards self-knowledge alone because the script has no hold on me. I am free, free to realize what I want, and free to live it. Live what you want and get what you live. So I remember when I was a brand new or fairly new Course in Miracles student, you know, in my first 6 months to a year, probably my first year. Well, actually, let me back up. Let me back up to when I was in the Air Force. When I was in the Air Force, I worked in intelligence. I was an intelligence reporter. So some of the people that I worked with were linguists. They collected intelligence information. If they recognized something as possibly important, they brought it to me. I analyzed it. If it was important, I reported it to whoever needed to know it. But as a part of doing that job, I also wanted to pay attention to what other intelligence reporters were reporting, because sometimes it would be like putting together the pieces of a puzzle, and then you would have a clearer view of what was happening, and you could do a more thorough report. So there was this room that I, you know, that we had that was at my service. We called it OPSCOM, which was Operational Communications. And OPSCOM, it kind of looked like a bunch of great big automatic typewriters. You know, it's kind of like an old newsroom with these reports just coming in on this long, long, long paper that never ends and it scrolls onto the floor, right? Can you guys imagine this? OPSCOM. And what would happen was there were people who worked the OPSCOM, and I would inform them of what I was reporting on, and they would keep their eye on all this stuff coming in from all over the world. And if they saw something that they thought might fit with what I was working on, they would rip that off the machines and bring it into me. Okay. Now, let's fast forward. I'm finally a Course in Miracles student. So one day, Holy Spirit used that image with me when I was trying to understand. I'm reading about the script, and the script is already written, and I'm reading all of that in A Course in Miracles, and I don't understand. And what the Holy Spirit said to me was, the script was like the OPSCOM in my mind. You know, just like all that paper was constantly running full of information off of those automatic typewriting looking machines. That's what the thoughts are doing in my mind. They're just like OPSCOM. And it's interesting because the majority of that stuff just landed on the floor. You know, I mean, I had stuff coming in from all over the world, and the majority of it would have nothing to do with whatever I was working on at the time. So the majority of it just landed on the floor. Only was the useful information ripped off and brought to me, right? And so I thought it was a really good symbol, because what happens with the OPSCOM in the mind is we aren't discerning for that good information that fits with what I need to know right now or what I'm working on. Instead, we're too busy devouring all of the information that's coming on the OPSCOM on the mind, instead of just letting it go to the floor and be forgotten, right? We're too busy devouring all of it. So what we need to do is we need to learn to be discerning and say, wait a minute, these thoughts actually are useful to what I'm working on right now. I need this for what I'm working on. But the rest of this stuff is just crapola, right? It's just crapola. So, you know, my journal is pointing out that most of all, the script applies to the mind. You know, it's this OPSCOM in the mind. It's also seen through the mind as perceptions. But we're not the mind. And so the script doesn't need to have any effect or any hold on us. You know, we can be totally focused on our purpose, like I was as an intelligence reporter, totally focused on my purpose of writing just this report about this thing happening in this country, right? And, you know, we can be totally focused on our purpose, a narrowed purpose, and if anything comes in that's helpful to the purpose, then sure, we use it, right? But if it's not helpful to this purpose that I'm working on, then everything else just gets ignored. It doesn't need to have any effect on me. So having said that, if we look back at this quote, he who exerts seriously now is able to overcome predispositions and exalt himself from the states of darkness and stupidity and impurity. The states of darkness and stupidity and impurity, if we experience those states, those are coming upon us from believing the OPSCOM in the mind without discerning, without determining if this is useful to my purpose, right? It's just, it's really what's happening whenever any of us are, I'll use the word stupid, since that's what the quote uses. When any of us are stupid, it's because we're just believing the thoughts without discernment. You know, so whatever we're doing, you know, however we're acting, which is not a reflection of our true self. That's how I'm going to define stupid right now, if you don't mind. It's when we're acting in a way that is not a reflection of our true self, right? So whenever we're acting that way, it's just because we're believing all of those thoughts. Let me move on. Let me share my screen again, and we'll move on to 1034. If you really want it, you are passionate about it. If you are passionate about it, it is your life. It is what you live. Consciousness will give you whatever you live, whatever you are passionate about, because that is how consciousness operates. To say you want something while not living it signifies that you don't really want it. You always live what you really want. Knowing this, consciousness reads your living and gives you that. So again, quote 103.4, there is nothing that intense self-effort cannot achieve. So what this is saying to me is that, you know, and again, I put 1033 and 1034 together, so I'm going to go back to the reference to stupidity for a moment. If I am living in darkness, stupidity, or impurity, which means I'm just believing all of the thoughts in the mind, and I'm acting from those. You know, when I get mad at somebody, I yell at them. You know, if I hear a juicy story, I gossip. If I want you to think better of me than I think you do, I lie. I just do all that stuff, right? And that's the way most humans are. I mean, there's nothing unusual about what I described. That's the darkness, stupidity, and impurity that the quote is talking about, right? This is how most humans are. If they get upset at you, they yell or in some way express their annoyance, maybe flip you off in traffic or something, right? They, you know, if they want you to think better of them than they think you do, they lie. You know, if they hear a juicy story, they gossip. This is just what humans do, darkness, stupidity, and impurity. So if I'm living that, what I get is more darkness, stupidity, and impurity. You see, you're actually living what you really want. You may say that you want awakening, but what are you living? Right? What are you living? That's what my journal is saying. That was my contemplation of there is nothing that intense self-effort cannot achieve. In a way, most of us, although we don't call it intense self-effort, we actually are living intense self-effort towards darkness, stupidity, and impurity. And we are getting darkness, stupidity, and impurity. And by the way, the definition of that is love. If we live darkness, stupidity, and impurity, we receive darkness, stupidity, and impurity. That's love. We got what we asked for. So if we say that we want awakening, or we say we want light, wisdom, and purity, which would be the opposite of these, right? We say we want light, wisdom, and purity. What do we have to live? Light, wisdom, and purity. Exactly. So let me just share that journal entry with you again. If you really want it, you are passionate about it. If you are passionate about it, it is your life. It is what you live. Consciousness will give you whatever you live, whatever you are passionate about, because that is how consciousness operates. To say you want something while not living it signifies that you don't really want it. You always live what you really want. Knowing this, consciousness reads your living and gives you that. Any comments on what I've shared regarding 1033 and 1034? Yes, Ron.
Yeah, on 1034, one of the things that's really helped me a lot is, fortunately, at some point in the last couple of years, I fell in love with truth. And, we've all been through relationships of one sort or another. And I think what I've been trying to do is continually to fan that flame of infatuation, for lack of a better term, because in that stage of infatuation, effort doesn't seem like effort. It's effortless. We've seen our crazy friends do all these amazing things that took a lot of effort because they were so in love, and I'm sure I know I did some of those same things too. So I'm writing that one out. I don't know how long I can stay infatuated, with truth, or try to get the passion. But when I start feeling that wane just a little bit, that's really where I focus my attention, is on flaming or bolstering back up that infatuation, that passion, because then it's really seems so effortless.
Yeah, thank you very much, Ron. And I want to comment on what George wrote. He wrote, stupid is as stupid does, which, what's that guy's name that said that, the movie? Remind me, George.
I've been sitting here trying to remember it myself, so okay.
Forrest Gump?
Forrest Gump, right.
Go. Yeah, yeah, I could see Tom Hanks, but I couldn't remember the character's name, but yes. Stupid is and stupid does. That's a good way to sum up that journal entry that I just shared with you and the teaching I just shared. That's a good way to remember it. Stupid is and stupid does. Yeah, thank you. Any other comments? Yes, George.
And life is like a bowl of cherries.
Yeah.
I thought it was a box of chocolates.
I think it is a box of chocolates. Yeah. Life is like a box.
Never know what you're going to get.
Yeah. Only what's actually happening here is this teaching is saying the opposite. I mean, you may not know exactly what you're going to get, but if you're living stupidity, you're going to get more stupidity. If you're living wisdom, you're going to get more wisdom. So that way you do know what you're going to get based on your living, right? I think that's how we know we're getting old, George, is when we can't remember Forrest Gump. That's pretty common knowledge in our culture, isn't it?
My mind has been that way for 20 years, so I don't certainly see any change.
Okay, good. All right. Let's go look at 1037 next. Oh, be free from distress. Be free of duality. That sounds good. It's like, yeah, who's buying that? Let's all buy that. Be free from distress. Be free of duality. All right, let me go back and we'll look at my journal again. See why I picked this one out. All right, here we go. When everything is allowed, there is freedom. There is no freedom in control or manipulation, or in thoughts that fantasize about control or manipulation. What is the root of the desire for control and manipulation? I and this. If there is I, and there is this, this needs to be pleasing to I. So I controls if she can, or manipulates if she can, or at least, oops, typo, or at least fantasizes about control and manipulation. I and this are like two ends of a rope, which is wrapped around the human neck, pulled tightly, cutting off the supply of natural freedom. Let go of two, of I and this. Without two, there is natural allowance, which is freedom. So again, the quote said, be free from distress, be free of duality. So it appears that what happened to my mind when I read this is I thought about things, maybe even specific things at the time, that I was distressed about and wanted to control. Right, wanted things to work out in a certain way so that I could, quote, feel free. And that's what the mind is promising. Whenever we're distressed about something and we want to control something, want something to work out in a particular way, what the mind is really saying is when this finally gets that way, you will feel free. So what happened is I was contemplating this quote, as you saw, about the I and the this, the duality, right? The I and then this was like a rope around the neck pulling tight. There is no freedom. You know, as long as I think there is a me and there is a this situation, or me and this person, and I need to either control this situation or I need to control or manipulate this person in order to get what I want, it's like having two ends of a rope, an I and of this, and I'm pulling tight around my own neck and I can't actually get freedom. That was the symbol that was coming, right? So in order to be free, I have to let go of the I, which means I have to let go of the personal will. I have to let go of the preference that anything be a certain way. Then I drop at least one end of the rope. And if I drop that end of the rope, well, this end of the rope can't even, I mean, you know, you just pull it, it just falls off your neck, right? Or I let go of the this. And the way that you let go of the this, at least in my humble opinion, is the loving all method. You see, the loving all method makes everything the same. It's something to love, right? The this that's in this particular journal entry is really saying I'm deciding that some things are okay, some things are not okay, some things are threatening, right? And again, things have to be controlled. But if I let go of the this and practice loving all, then again, I drop at least one side of the rope And imagine if I let go of personal will and I choose loving all, I've let go of both ends of the rope. That's freedom. Because now I get to be happy no matter what. And isn't, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but to me, freedom and happiness are synonymous, right? So that's what that particular journal entry was about. The I and the this, that's what strangles us. That's not freedom. So you want to let go of the I, let go of the this, and you have freedom. Again, be and you're free of distress, right? Because this is pretty distressing, strangling yourself all the time. So be free from distress. Be free of duality. And again, my contemplation said, in order to do that, let go of the I and let go of the this by letting go of personal will and practicing loving all. So anything anybody wants to share on that? Yes, George.
Yes, as you were sharing, the loving all method is what came to me. It's like, you know, as people, we want what we want and we don't want what we don't want. And that's in regard to circumstances or whatever. And if it's something we don't want, we project out some sort of fear into the future that it's going to get worse. We think about something in the past that we didn't want. And so it takes us away from now. So to me, it's all about staying right here, right now, and not projecting into the future.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's absolutely perfect. Thanks for sharing that. Anybody else want to share? All right, then, let me see what I looked at next. 1039. It says, be free from all mental perversions and from the blinding taint of illusion. Rest content in your own self. Thus, be free from all distress. Remain in an expansive state in the self, like the full ocean. Rejoice in the self by the self. And I have that we can go look at the journal again, turn 39A. So we'll go peek at that. A perversion is the alteration of something from its original course or meaning. Today's quote says, be free from all mental perversions. This begs the question, what is mind meant for? What is its original course? So again, a perversion is an alteration of something from its original course or meaning. And that led me to ask, well, what the heck is mind for then? I mean, we all know that mind is pretty perverted. Thought is pretty perverted. That would mean that it altered from its original course. What was its original course? And when I asked that question, two answers came. Experience and transcendence. Meaning that mind is the tool that allows us to experience a world. That was one of its purposes. Experience. But then its other purpose is to transcend that same very world. Those are mind's two purposes. And then after looking at that, I continued with the contemplation. I notice neither answer is reality. The mind was not meant to be my reality. The mind was not meant to determine what is and isn't reality. Therefore, a mental perversion is a thought that defines or implies reality. Defining reality is not mind's job. Giving temporary experience is mind's job. It is also mind's job to assist me in transcending this domain of experience, the one I experience now, toward a higher level of being. Do not be afraid to use mind for the purpose of transcendence, since that is part of its original course and not a mental perversion. But the reason I wanted to share that is as I contemplated that, it felt somewhat enlightening me for me to realize that the purpose of mind is to give me an experience or to transcend experience, but not to define reality. Right? I thought that was pretty enlightening. So if I remember, you know, like a movie is designed to give you an experience, right? When sad things happen in a movie, if you cry, like in the movie The Notebook, The Notebook is designed to give you that experience of just crying your eyes out, right? Even my brother cried in The Notebook, right? You go see another movie, it's intended to make you laugh. Another movie is intended to scare you. But movies aren't intended to define reality. And if you believe a movie is reality, you're deluded. Well, it's the same thing with the mind. The mind is intended to create a world to give us experience. It is not intended to define reality. So if we just keep that in mind, that can change our experience of the world. Instead of seeing the world as reality, we can see it as one temporary experience after another temporary experience after another temporary experience. And that is actually going to change your experience of the temporary experience. Because the reason we take the temporary experience as seriously as we do is because we think it's reality. Right? We've let mind tell us it's reality. And it's not mind's job to define reality. It never has been mind's job to define reality. It's only mind's job to either A, give us an experience, or B, help us transcend experience. And that's pretty interesting too. You know, all of these tools that we use to help us, whoops, let me turn that off. I almost never have my phone on, but today I was waiting for an important phone call and I turned it on and I forgot to turn it back off. Most of the tools that we use to transcend experience actually are mental tools. Self-inquiry is a mental tool. Root cause inquiry is a mental tool. Saying a mantra is a mental tool, right? I mean, we could probably go, studying and contemplating spiritual materials is a mental tool. So clearly, mind has a purpose in transcending experience. But again, mind doesn't define reality, ever. So I'll just pause there. I think that's all I wanted to share about that. Does anybody have anything they'd like to say? Yes, Susan.
Would it be safe to say, could we also discern that when you talk about temporary experiences, one temporary experience after another, could you also say that each experience that we have is a learning experience? Or are there some experiences that are just there, neutral? Can you even go that far as to say everything here is to be loved and to be learned from?
Well, I think you could say everything here is to be loved. I'll tell you what I was pausing when you asked if everything was a learning experience. It's not that I'm not still learning, but I'm not learning at the rate that I was. Like when I was in my purification phase, then it seemed like everything was a learning experience. But now it seems more like some experiences are an opportunity to just be with that. And be with and learning from, to me, are kind of different. So I don't know if I would say everything is a learning experience, although that may be the way it seems when going through purification, especially if there's lots of challenging things going on. I would say all challenging experiences are learning experiences. But, you know, if you're just sitting on the back porch watching the sunrise, that might just be a being experience. Right? Unless you're still having to learn to be, which happens for a while. Some of us just don't know how to be. That's the advantage of, right now, I just finished a bunch of quotes, you know, in step six about how pilgrimages aren't necessary. And I get that. I understand that completely. But at least for me, what's been very, very helpful about pilgrimages is that my daily life is a pretty busy daily life. You know, if I'm not doing work, I'm doing what my family wants me to do, which in a way still just feels like another thing that I do. You know what I mean? And the nice thing about a pilgrimage is when I'm on a pilgrimage, nobody's asking anything of me. When I'm on a pilgrimage, I get to just be wherever I'm at. I get to just be. And I honestly feel like I got the feel of being while on pilgrimage and then would bring that feel back and practice staying in that feeling in my busy life. I think it would have been harder to get the feel of being in my busy life without taking a break from it. Does that make sense?
I get that. It's the nothing to do, nowhere to go, just full presence.
Just be. Yeah. So I did have to learn how to be, you know, it should have been natural to me, it seems like, but it wasn't, you know, and I learned that on pilgrimage. In fact, I really remember when it hit me. I was in India. I was with Jacqueline at the time. This was my third trip to India. And, you know, we were there for 2 or 3 weeks. I don't remember how long we were there. I think 2 weeks on that pilgrimage. And all we did in India was go one place and sit for 2 or 3 hours, then maybe get up and move and go to another place and sit, maybe get something to eat and then go somewhere else and sit. And after several days of doing this, we were sitting in this one place. And it just hit me like a ton of bricks. This is what we're meant to do. Right? We're meant to just be, you know, and we've forgotten how to be. And there we got so into just being, and it was just clear this was our natural state. This was our natural purpose. And then again, the challenge becomes to take that being and instead of coming back here and being all busy again and saying, oh, I got to go back to India, right? The key is to learn to move into that state of being even while busy. And you can, and just stay in the being at all times. So yeah, if you don't know how to be yet, then maybe everything is a learning experience. But once you learn how to be, then it's a being experience. It's another opportunity just to be. George, what did you give us a link to?
This has nothing to do with our discussion, but Karen Stemmler sent me this YouTube presentation of James Twyman presenting in Assisi in one of the monasteries there. And he presented it as if he was
St. Francis.
St. Francis,
that.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
so.
I saw that.
I wanted to share that in case you hadn't seen it because it is just marvelously done.
Yeah, I saw that. That was in San Damiano, which, by the way, San Damiano is one of my favorite places in the world to be. You know, like to go and just sit and learn to be. I love that little church. It's just a wonderful place to go and sit and learn to be and just sit there for as long as you can. Just don't do anything else, right? Just sit there. All right, let me see what I have on here next. That was 1039, so I guess we're going to 1043. No, 1042. I have 1042 first. Ooh, 1042 is a longer one. I love 1043. We'll get to that one. That's one of my favorite ones. 1042. Oh, unsteady mind. This worldly life is not conducive to your true happiness. Hence, reach the state of equanimity. And interestingly, I'm talking about we have to learn to be. That's really my word for equanimity. Equanimity and being are the same thing. Equanimity is being. I'm trying to find another word though. Equanimity is being stably happy, stably at peace, no matter what's occurring. That's equanimity. So, oh, unsteady mind, this worldly life is not conducive to your true happiness. Hence, reach the state of equanimity. It is in such equanimity that you will experience peace, bliss, and the truth. Whenever you create perverse thinking in yourself, out of your wantonness, it is then that this world illusion begins to expand and spread out. It is when you entertain desire for pleasure that this world illusion sprouts countless branches. It is thought that gives rise to this network of world appearance. Hence, abandon this whim and fancy and attain to equanimity. So what this quote is really saying is that the seed of illusion is desire. And it makes sense if you really contemplate it with the knowledge of what you are in mind. You are consciousness, which creates, right? You are consciousness, which creates. So if you desire, what must come of that? Creation. The interesting thing is, what is created is experience, not reality. And one word that people use for that is illusion. They call it illusion because it appears to be reality when it isn't. Therefore, it's an illusion. It appears to be something that it's not. It's not reality. It's very, very fair to say it's experience. But it's not reality. So what this quote is saying is that when you desire something, it doesn't matter what you desire. You know, you could desire that your children be different than they are, which Jasmine is now severely offended. Oh. I was just using her as an example because she's right in front of me and I have to make stuff up as I go along. But yeah, you could desire that your children be different than they are. You could desire that your spouse be different than they are. You could desire that you have more than you have. You could even desire that you have less than you have. You could perceive everything that you have as a burden and you want less. I mean, it doesn't matter what you desire. What this is saying is each desire is filled with a whole bunch of little seeds. Seeds that you might not even be aware of. And so when you're desiring, you're planting all of these seeds, which are going to sprout in more experience, or we could call that more illusion, which means you remain blinded or confused regarding reality for more time. In fact, let me go ahead and take you ahead to some of my journal entries from today, which were different quotes, but interestingly, even though I'm up here in the 1300s, somewhere in here, I was contemplating the same thing this morning. I remember it. So let me see if I can find it. Here we go, right here, number 1306. I start off by saying, oh my goodness. I love the clear wisdom advice in this quote. Here's the quote. If we want anything in this world or the next, our energy will be dispersed in these desires. And to fulfill these desires, we shall have to be reborn again and again. In every desire, there's little seeds. They're like weeds. Then I wrote, I feel as though I've never heard anything more clear than this. This is why one single desire is the way. If we want anything in this world or the next, our energy will be dispersed in these desires. And to fulfill these desires, we shall have to be reborn again and again. It makes perfect sense, since we are the energy that creates. If I want something, my energy must move in that direction. I can't have only one thing as long as my energy moves in the direction of many things, or a few things, or even two things. To have only one thing, my energy must be gathered under the roof of only one thing. And of course, this one thing I'm talking about is awakening. To have only one thing, my energy must be gathered under the roof of only one thing. It cannot be dispersed. It must be one united force. And then I remembered this quote from Jesus, a house divided against itself will fall. But it's an interesting thing to contemplate that a desire, I mean, you guys, I don't know, here in Pueblo West, we have a lot of weeds. I don't know about where you are, but I mean, this is like the kingdom of weeds around here. And, you know, every one weed, that's okay. Every one weed sends out many, many, many seeds. Every one weed. No wonder it's the kingdom of weeds around here. Well, that's what this is saying about desire. Every one desire sends out many, many, many seeds. And so the illusion just kind of keeps growing and growing and growing. And so if you look, in fact, think of like a dandelion, right? When it turns into the white fluffy thing, that's one dandelion. But what happens when you blow on it? Right? Many seeds go in all directions. So that's what's happening with a desire. Every single desire sends out many seeds. And so this is why if you really do want awakening, it's important to put all of your energy just into that desire. And again, you do that by attaining equanimity, which means learning to just be with whatever is, right? Instead of wanting it to be different, that's a desire. Instead of wanting something you don't have, that's a desire. Instead of wanting less, you know, like maybe even less responsibility, right? Instead of wanting less than you have. That's a desire, and each desire has many, many seeds. So you attain equanimity. You learn the loving all method. You have no will of your own. You be at peace with whatever is, and you're no longer blowing on dandelions. You're no longer spreading all of those seeds. I'll pause and see if any of you guys have anything you want to share. And you get to be happy, too, with whatever is on top of it. It's a bonus. All right, then tell you what. Let's go to 104.3. I love this quote. I'm glad we have time for it. It's a long one, but I love it. Whatever sorrows there may be that seem to be difficult to overcome, now, that's the first thing we just kind of want to pause. We've all had sorrows that seem difficult to overcome. So this is what it's talking about. Whatever sorrows there may be that seem difficult to overcome are easily crossed over with the help of the boat of wisdom or the inner light. He who is devoid of this wisdom is bothered even by minor difficulties. But he who has this wisdom, even if he is alone and helpless in this world, and even if he is unlearned in the scriptures, easily crosses the sea of sorrow. even without the help of another. The man of wisdom accomplishes his work, and this means spiritual work. He who is without wisdom does not, nay, even his capital is lost, and that means any gains that he experienced spiritually are lost. Hence, one should constantly endeavor to gain this inner light or wisdom. Even as one who aspires for fruits exerts constant effort in his garden. Wisdom is the root which, when thus constantly nourished, yields the good fruits of self-knowledge. The effort and the energy that are directed by the people in worldly activities should first be directed to the gaining of this wisdom. Now, this wisdom is what I call spiritual intuition. We're not talking about learning a particular thing. We're just talking about how to access that inner spiritual wisdom so it can be your guide always. And this is really saying that without spiritual wisdom, you're lost. With spiritual wisdom, you've always got what you need. And it's saying that the most important thing for you to do is to cultivate that relationship with spiritual wisdom. And the reason that I wanted, the reason I love this quote, and the reason I wanted to point it out is, again, this was a key purpose of gentle healing. And you guys are in the last little bit of gentle healing. I mean, I don't know exactly when we're finally going to finish this book. I'm going to guess May or June. But in 2020, before 2020 is over, you will have completed gentle healing. Some of you have gone through all 3 years. What do you do then? People always ask, when they finish MPP, now what? And I'm sure when they finish gentle healing, now what? And the answer to that is, you follow that internal wisdom. It's just like at the end of A Course in Miracles, in the epilogue of A Course in Miracles, what Jesus says at the end of A Course in Miracles is that now he turns you over to your inner teacher. And it's funny because we all know people that have studied A Course in Miracles for 25 or 30 years. And to be honest, that's not the teachings of A Course in Miracles. A Course in Miracles is meant as a year-long curriculum that gets you in touch with your inner teacher and then turns you over to your inner teacher. In fact, it even says in the introduction to A Course in Miracles that the purpose of this course is to help some people, which means not everybody, the course isn't for everyone, is to help some people realize their inner teacher. That's also been the purpose of gentle healing. You know, if there's one thing that I want you to get out of gentle healing, it's not all the stuff that we learned. It's just that connection with your own inner teacher. I mean, listen to how specific this is. This is saying, he who is devoid of this wisdom is bothered even by minor difficulties. Right? Traffic when you didn't expect it, you know? Right? That's upsetting if you don't have this inner wisdom. But he who has this wisdom, even if he is alone, which most people don't like, but even if you're completely alone and completely helpless in this world, which means you don't have a job, you don't have, you know, just imagine yourself completely alone and completely helpless. The only thing you have is this wisdom. He who has this wisdom, even if he is alone and helpless in this world, and even if he's unlearned in the scriptures, even if you don't, you know, you haven't ever read anything that gives any spiritual guidance at all, the only thing you have is the ability to pay attention to intuition in the moment. He who has this wisdom, even if he is alone and helpless in this world, and even if he is unlearned in the scriptures, easily crosses the sea of sorrow. So you have the guidance with you all the time. You know what to do in every moment. Of course, you have to glance within and say, you know, what am I to do now? How am I to see this? What am I to think? Right? This is the teachings of Vinaya Ramana about surrender. But the most important thing you're getting out of gentle healing is that connection. And that's why in this last year, you're doing so much contemplation and so much writing just every day, every day. And in effect, I'm not doing much teaching. I mean, I come here 1 hour a week and I teach. But it's not like year one and year two where you had my tips, right? Year three, the tips have been taken away. And the tips were taken away so that you could learn to stand on your own 2 feet with this inner spiritual wisdom, so that when Gentle Healing 3 ends, you have that. Any comments? So I'll tell you what the last thing is that I want when Gentle Healing 3 ends. The last thing I want is for you to look at me and say, now what? You can look within and say, now what? But I want you to look at me and say, now what? If you do, it means I didn't do my job very good. And, you know, Awakening Together, as you know, I think is a doing business as name. Our legal name is Foundation for the Holy Spirit. Foundation for the Holy Spirit was founded in April of 2006. It's been here much longer than Awakening Together. And the mission of Foundation for the Holy Spirit, which then is also the mission of Awakening Together, the mission of Foundation for Holy Spirit is to help individuals become self-reliant with their own inner wisdom. And of course, that's what Awakening Together is all about. It's a tool to help Foundation for the Holy Spirit achieve its mission. And that's what Gentle Healing is all about, the same tool to help the Foundation for the Holy Spirit to achieve its mission. I have here to end with number 1051. So let's jump over there because it looks like it's time to end. Yeah. I am pure consciousness. I am peace beyond thought. I'll tell you a secret. Every time I read, I am peace beyond thought, it's like something very familiar. You know, A Course in Miracles says something about a song that we can barely hear and yet it's very familiar. That's the feeling I get when I read, I am peace beyond thought. It's like I've always known this. I've always known this. Like it's way, way back in there. You know, almost like a lullaby that my mom sang to me every night when I was a kid. Right? I am peace beyond thought. It's so familiar. So I just kind of wanted to end with those words. I am peace beyond thought. All right, you guys have a very Merry Christmas, and I will see you hopefully next Monday night. I love you all. Bye.